Hello, thank you for downloading this episode of Flock and Awe. Flock and Awe is part of the Lost Nexus Network. You can find other great content at losthemisphere.com. Enjoy the show!
In 2013, a crack podcasting unit was sent to prison by Kangaroo Corp for a crime they did not commit. These men promptly escaped from a Games Workshop to the internet. Today, still wanted by their wives and loved ones, they survive as soldiers of plastic. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them on Twitter, maybe you can listen to the FNA team.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Flock and Awe. It's going to be a special one this time because, let's be honest, they're all special with my co-host involved. But we're going to be looking at the end of times. Unfortunately for everybody else, this won't be the end of times of Flock and Awe.
Hooray!
Sally warning! Sally warning!
Sally warning! Sally warning!
Sally warning! I'm going to put
Sally warning! Did we mention Sally warning?
If I do it right, I might be able to put a siren in there as well. No, a really loud one, so when people... the, like, proper, proper piercing one, just to surprise people. because I'm a bastard.
Well, yes, yes you are.
So, we're looking at the end of times.
Let's do this right. This is a huge spoiler warning. Everything will be spoiled. It's going to smell like an unplugged refrigerator.
That's just...
They all die!
Well,
are you
no,
telling me they're all dead?
Yes, Dave. They're all dead.
Everyone?
Yeah, everybody's dead, Dave.
Techless?
Yeah, dead, Dave. Everyone is.
Surely not, Tyron. Tyron. Be
yes,
better if
Dave.
I knew some names, really, wouldn't it?
Oh yeah.
It'd be fucking hilarious, but you know.
And as our listeners can tell, these two have been wanting to do this for weeks now.
No.
Yes. It's been in my email for a while now.
How long it takes you to read a fucking book?
I read this thing in 3 days. Archaon. I got it on Saturday. I was done on Tuesday.
Giggity.
Oh, yeah. It just took me that long to wash up. Anyway.
I'm going to put some Craig David in there as well.
No. For God's sake, no.
All right. So, as long-term listeners will remember, we talked about Nagash Rite when that came out. So, rather than going over that dead bear, we'll point you at that episode eventually, someday, maybe. It should still be out there somewhere.
Yeah, it's still there.
So
I might even put it in the show notes.
Woo. We have show notes?
No.
No.
Rundown, Nagash came back.
And it cost the old world already the first batch of characters.
Yes, it did. A lot of characters like Grand Fjognus, Volkmar, Eltharion,
Tyrion's daughter.
Tyrion. Well, that was going to go into non-game characters, which were Belinar, Tarkus's daughter, or not Tyrion's daughter, rather.
Oh, sorry.
And then, yeah, then they destroyed the land of the dead. All the Tomb King lands were squished,
yep.
Crunched, turned to dust, and then Nagash teabagged it all.
Yeah, and the Black Pyramid turns into a monolith.
Pretty much, yeah. And then
it takes off and floats in the sky.
Oh yeah, that's pretty much. I'm not going to argue. Nagash said, "You know what? That wind of death that's getting sucked into that vortex and yeah, no, dibbed.
Mine."
Yeah, he pulls up an entire wind of magic and plants it in Sylvania. Says, no, fine. Wait. As our friend Mr. Chomnik, whatever, on Twitter, mine.
Yeah. Oh, bless him. But, considering that vortex had been like there for thousands of years, keeping all the magic contained, and he's unthreaded it just with a snap of his fingers.
Yeah, that was pretty badass. But yeah, that was part one. Let's see. From Nagash, So that's basic real quick what happened. Moving into Glotkin. Glotkin was a very interesting book. It's different. All the other books were based off of established characters. The Glotkin was, oh, hey, we're going to give you guys something brand new, and a lot of people said, what?
Yeah, I think that was the hardest thing as I was reading through.
Yeah, it's not connection.
Yeah, it was like a three-prong attack by Nurgle forces into the Empire.
Yeah.
And all the leaders of each of these wings, it's like, and here is this character that you've never really... Some of them you've heard about, but never really knew anything.
Yeah.
Others were completely brand new, and it's like, who are they? I mean, at least with the Nagash book, when they're on about Manfred von Karstein and the scheming he's trying to do. That's established history.
Everybody knows Manfred. He's been there forever.
There's attachment there. This was just very, very fresh. Numb.
As bad as it is to say for a Nurgle book, it was fresh. It was new.
And clean.
It's like, what? That is the biggest complaint I've seen about that book. I liked it. I liked the characters. I love the whole thing. But yeah, there was no established emotional connection to begin with. In that one, again, everybody dies. Well, not everybody, but most of the people. They effectively destroyed Altdorf, which is pretty freaking huge. Karl Franz, here's one of the spoilers. He got his ass kicked at the end of the book. And you don't realize it, right? Or you don't realize it till the end of the fifth book. But he suffered he went through a major change there. Not just becoming the incarnate of heavens. But we'll get on to that later.
And also, not only that, but the Bretonians get quite a thrashing in that as well.
Oh, yeah. You don't hear anything about the Bretonians for a long time. They might have said something in the Wood Elf book. I don't know. Because, you know, fuck Wood Elves. Had to say it.
Oh, yeah, that was one of the other characters in the Gash Summon that got sacrificed. It was the Fae Enchantress.
Yeah.
Fae Enchantress, yeah. She was one of them that got sacrificed from the Gash.
Yep, she was one of the chew toys for the Gash coming back. And then there was that Wood Elf hero, whatever his name is, Mr. I've Got a Bird. He wanders in, and then he gets sucked off somewhere into the warp or something. Wow, completely unintentional. But funny.
He got sucked off, did he end up in, like, Slash's realm or something?
Nurgle's, actually. Moving on. In the end, Festus, the leech lord, leech doctor, whatever he is, he becomes Nurgle's gardener, which is pretty cool. It's one part... Yes, there was a whole lot of new stuff in Glotkin, but there were a few characters that you see that did stuff. I mean, Epidemus, the demonic herald of Nurgle.
Yeah.
He's there. He does what you expect of him, and there's nothing more for that. There's no shiny really for him at all. No. Festus, though, he makes up for it.
I liked Festus because he
was funny.
Yeah, that sort of, where all the others, like, we are big, powerful, mighty, undefeated, unbeatable warriors of chaos with the blessing of Nurgle, and here is our army, and blah, 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 blah. There's Festus going, and the sewers, and the radicals, and I'm just tinkering away with my little Nurgling advisors on my shoulder, singing little merry tunes, and he was just...
It was fun!
In the shadows, doing Nurgle's wish. It doesn't have to be massive armies that can topple cities. He was doing...
I'm
as
walking around
damage.
All dwarf in the middle of the night putting crappy stuff in all the window boxes.
Yeah.
That's what he did. And he was, I don't know if he was actually elevated or not for it. At the end, he was one blessing away from becoming a demon prince. And then he fought, and then he had a face-off with Vlad von Karstein, and it appeared that Vlad won, but Festus didn't leave a corpse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I took it as he had got turned into a demon prince, or Nurgle had taken him for his own.
Which, if he did, I'm looking forward to Festus the Demon Prince in the new edition of Warhammer, and maybe even in 40K.
Because
that would be kind of cool. The Gardener of Nurgle.
Yeah, I mean...
The Demon Prince.
Be quite cool, there with his plinking shears.
So that was a Glotkin. All right, the next up was Cain. That one was a doozy. That was, we're going to take everything you know about the Warhammer world and bend it over a barrel.
Yeah.
When I
read this, it felt very kind of Empire Strikes Back as more of a bridge between the other books kind of story than, whereas like Nagash was kind of quite standalone, and even Glotkin was quite standalone. This just seems to be more, oh, what happened in this book is explained here, and it just seems to have lots of bridges.
Oh, it is very bridging. It does bridge everything. It does explain a lot of, wait a minute, that's weird. What happened there? Why is this happening? What's going on here? What's going on in the rest of the world? There is a lot of that. And in addition, using your Empire Strikes Back analogy, Cain was a, oh shit, the bad guys are winning book. I mean, you do get a bit of that with Glotkin. Not really so much, because Karl Franz comes back and he kicks the Glotkin's ass. And that's, yay, the good guys won. They got fucked over hard, but hey, the good guys won, yay. But Nagash, it's all, there's a new power. Yes, he's a evil dickhead, but he's a dickhead we've known for years. Whereas Cain, it's, so that country that's been floating in the middle of the world, in the middle of the ocean, you know, since time began, is gone. The country that all the Dark Elves have been sitting in for thousands upon thousands of years is sacked. It's gone. There's nothing relevant there anymore. It's everything you knew about the elves got twisted and put sideways and all jacked up.
And still trying to do the elven politics.
And they're still doing that, yes. It's...
old habits die hard.
Pretty much, yeah. It's just... at the end of the book, there was this one thing that really bothered me. And in the end, I'm reading it, and it's like, okay, it's not really as creepy as it sounds, but it still is. Okay, Malekith becomes the Phoenix King. He actually has a rightful claim on the throne.
Yep.
And all the other Phoenix Kings ever since, they were actually pretenders, believe it or not. It's like, how the hell did that work out? Okay. They explain how it works, and it's like, holy shit. Okay, yes. To secure his position on the throne, the Everqueen promises to marry him. It's like, okay. And she did that of her own free will.
So is that how he got... is that how he got kicked out of the flame at the start of the Civil War, then?
At the start of the Civil War, he didn't get kicked out of the flame. He threw himself out because he was too weak to stand in it long enough. If he'd stand in it for if he'd stood there a few seconds longer, Essarion would have healed him and empowered him completely.
Oh.
It was his own damn fault. Essarion wanted him. And ever since then, because he threw himself out and he ran away like a little bitch, all the other Phoenix Kings that went in, they had magical protection. And Essarion couldn't throw enough power at them to say, no, bitch, you're not the one. I don't want you.
Oh.
All the other elves are saying, no, don't die, don't die. And so they were all not quite right, and he kept throwing nightmares at them, and they all died.
Yeah, basically.
How many Phoenix Kings died peacefully in their sleep? One? Maybe two?
Yeah.
Yeah, they all died of madness, they all died of in war, something like that.
One of them suddenly disappeared off a boat and all that lot.
He was wearing full armor. He decides to go swimming. So yeah, Essarion said, "No, we're not going to let you guys stick around that long." And with elves and gods, that long is centuries.
But I mean, in a sort of weird kind of twist on we might as well just explain a little bit here with this book. Basically, the Dark Elves end up almost being the saviors of the elf race, Tyrion goes a bit sort of power mad and gets the Sword of Cain and becomes his avatar of Cain.
Yeah, the curse of
His bloodline.
whatever his father was, Asurian. Anarian, that's the one. The Curse of Anarian kicks in, and Tyrion becomes the avatar of Cain. And he says, you know, fuck the elves, I'm going to kill half of them. And the half that follows me are the ones that get to live a little bit longer.
Yeah, in his mind, yeah, this war is good because any elf that survives is obviously, by natural selection, better. So therefore, when we go off and fight Chaos, even though we'll be half the strength, we'll be twice as good.
We'll be twice the elf. Wait. Yeah. But yeah, that's basically how that went. The part that concerned me is when you go back through the bloodline, the storyline, well, the history. The Everqueen is the daughter of the previous Phoenix King and the previous Everqueen. And that's been the way it's gone down for the last thousands of, ever since there was a Phoenix King. The Everqueen was always there before that. But the part that bothered me was Malekith is the son of Anarion, which was the first Phoenix King. So that means the Everqueen is a descendant of Anarion as well. So he's marrying his niece. Or not his niece's cousin, like 11 times removed, something like that.
Cousin is legal, and even in certain states, brother and sister are fine, aren't they?
Probably, I don't know. Fucking South.
Hi, Ma.
Yeah, I don't even try to... I went looking up some of those laws recently, and that's just like, how the hell is that still legal? And that has absolutely nothing to do with the end times, so we're moving on. That train got completely derailed. Malekith married his 11 times cousin or something like that. And it's creepy, but it's not because it's that far apart. But it's still, you know, that's kind of creepy. But in the end, it doesn't matter because, well, they're all dead.
The other bit, it was all throughout the story of Cain, it was various battles and that. And, like, certain heroes in the armies that were, like, really outstanding, all that lot. And they suddenly turn out to be carrying the essence of various elf gods. And, like,
yes.
Literally, half of it I was recalling from original Eldar Craftworld mythology and that, like, Vol, yep. The blind god, strapped to his anvil, making weapons for Cain and all this kind of stuff.
Yep, yeah, he was in there. He got his ass kicked. There was one elf goddess. I don't remember what her name was right now. The elf goddess of mysteries, who ends up being, much to no surprise at all, also the Lady of the Lake for Britonia. That comes into play in Archaon, and we'll get to that. She actually bestows her role onto Teclis. Teclis is running
Is that Lilith?
Yes, that's the one, yeah. That was her name. She gets her daughter, which apparently was Tyrion's squire, I believe, becomes the new elf goddess of the dead, and she's taking souls and building a little haven, a little pocket dimension, I'm guessing. That gets wrapped up in Archaon. But at the end of Cain, there is only one elf deity remaining, and that's Lilith.
Oh.
And even at that point, she's been... they strip it of her power. She's there isn't much left of her at all. I believe that's about it for Cain.
Well,
am I missing anything?
Well, there is the ceremony that happens at the very end.
Oh, you're right. At the very end. Okay.
That's a fairly big thing.
That's a very big thing, yeah. So, Teclis says, you know, that magical vortex, fuck it. Break it.
Well, since it's already weakened with what Nagash has done, that's a really good idea. Let's carry on doing that with all the other colors.
Yeah, so he's yanking out all the different colors of magic. Okay, let's see. We've got the... oh, crap. I lost control of this wind. Oh, crap. I lost control of that wind. The lore of the beast, the lore of metal, and the lore of fire go switching off into the distance, and no idea at that time where they went and who got them or whatever. It's very interesting what happens.
Is it light disappears but heads towards the human realms?
Nope.
Is it...
heaven.
Heaven, sorry.
The heavens went off. And that slammed into Karl Franz as he's getting his ass kicked by the Glotkin.
Which explains why in that book, when he suddenly comes back up...
all of a sudden, boom, he's hit with thunder
coming out of his arsehole and lightning out of his eyes, and yeah.
Basically, yes. as I've said, there's a lot of stuff that gets explained in Archaon. I'm going to break one of those right now. Karl Franz died. He got his ass kicked. He got chopped up. He had a sword stuck through him. Then he gets hit by the wind of heavens, and all of a sudden he's all shiny and happy and beats the shit out of the Glotkin and destroys them. A small problem. That wasn't Karl Franz. That was Karl Franz's shell, yes. But Karl Franz's, oh, that went away. You know who was at the, you can guess who was at the driver's wheel now.
I'm thinking like Vlad?
No, Sigmar.
Ah, fair enough.
Apparently, this is never explained in the books. This confuses the fuck out of me as to how this happened. Apparently when Sigmar went off to visit the dwarves way back at the dawn of the Empire, well, he never made it. Well, that. Apparently he was sucked into the wind of heavens by Tzeentch somehow.
Right.
And then trapped in the vortex.
Okay.
So for 2,500 years, he's sitting there going, guys, I'm not supposed to be here. Guys, what's going on? Somebody let me out.
And then he finds a way out.
Teclis breaks the vortex. Sigmar goes, hey, I've got the wind of heavens with me. Yoink! Runs off and steals his current... So
that's why that one almost gets directed without anyone knowingly controlling it.
Yeah, it follows the two-tailed comet and goes and smacks up Karl Franz's beaten corpse.
I'm disappointed. I thought it would have turned out that the dwarf sucked him into the hammer.
Well, the hammer was elsewhere at the time. Bolton had the hammer at the time.
So the beast, fire, and metal go AWOL.
The metal actually get sucked to the dwarves.
Yeah, well, we'll come to that later. So
yep.
Just to go through, so the beast, fire, and metal go AWOL. Nagash's got the amethyst, or death magic.
The heavens goes to Karl Franz, and then that leaves
shadow,
light, and life.
Yes.
The shadow gets bound into Malekith.
Yep.
Which is a, as we know him, a good match.
But at the same point,
but at the same
originally
time, Teclis
was
pissed because he's like, I wanted to escalate his connection to Asurion by binding the fire into him and promoting the, he's the shining light of the end of the elves.
Yeah.
And it didn't quite go that way. The lore of life gets bound into the Everqueen, which she was always a forest-loving, tree-hugging hippie anyways, so it worked. She goes on to show that just because she controls life doesn't mean she can't kick ass. And the lore of light, Teclis bound into his staff. Giggity. But at the time, a lot of people were figuring, okay, he's going to take that power for himself. He's going to use the power for himself. Or the staff itself is going to become some kind of relic. Because there's an entire lore of magic bound into a staff. That's powerful.
Some mad skills.
I mean, one thing I thought was interesting, because in this book, fundamentally, all the elves reunite. Some of them more grudgingly than others, but they all combine. Yeah. And
they become one kingdom, yes.
Yeah, and these three scions of magic, there's one for each of the three sub-factions. There's one wood elf, one high elf, one dark elf.
There was no wood elf.
The Everqueen,
Everqueen is high elf.
No, but she become part of the wood elves.
Well, they all do, really.
No, but...
I see what you mean. Yes, that was one of the things. The Everqueen did absorb the essence of Ariel, the queen of the wood elves. I see where you're going with that now. Yes.
So, there was three scions within the elven realm, and it was one for each of the factions, which was very kind of neat.
Yeah. In the long run, further down the line, it goes to show that while the elves are technically one kingdom, they're still three different types. The high elves don't like the dark elves. The dark elves are pissed at being stuck in the wood elf land, and the wood elves are pissed off that, hey, these assholes are taking our area. Go back to your own country! Oh, wait, you destroyed it.
Oh, yeah, and after this ceremony with the Winds of Magic, the Vortex disappears and the whole fucking island sinks.
Yes. Oh, and Marathi and the former Phoenix King, Kalidor, I think, which, yeah, it was Kalidor and Marathi, get bitch-slapped around by Slaanesh because the Vortex is falling apart. Slaanesh reaches through.
I thought it was only the hag, not Kalidor.
No, no, the former Phoenix King grabbed Marathi so she couldn't escape.
Oh, yeah, that
and
was
he
it,
went
yes.
with her. So he sacrificed himself so that that bitch would die forever.
I mean, we're talking quite a bit about this. There was a lot that went on. It's more a case of you read this, and then when you read the others, go, ah, that explains that. Or when you read a later book, it's, ah, that's happened because of this in this part of the world. The yeah. knock-on effect is felt here.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
From here, I think we're moving on to Thankful. Mm. Is there anything else that I missed?
No, I think that was it, really. I mean, it was a good read, but...
If it's a fresh read, you're going to be confused as fuck.
Yeah.
And you read the other ones, this makes so much more sense, and it makes the others make so much more sense. It is definitely required reading in the series.
It's the one that ties everything together.
Yeah, it's the backbone. It really is.
One book to bind them all.
Nice.
Oh, dear. I held off from making the obvious pun.
Why?
I couldn't. Sorry.
Why? All right, so the next book in the series was one I was looking forward to the most, really. Thankful.
I will say at this point, these...
I do love my rats. The rats were my first Warhammer Fantasy army.
Yeah, I was going to just say, at this point, I haven't read these two books yet. I can't wait. I just haven't got hold of them yet. Other things have taken precedence over my money. So you're going to have to explain a lot here, Ryan, for me and everyone else.
I've only read this one once so far. The other three I've read twice already. I'm still working my way through the entire series again. So I'm probably going to screw some stuff up anyways.
Yeah, we won't judge you.
Yeah, you will.
I know.
Don't lie.
Well, I think the first big thing, because this was also this was mentioned in the Nagash book, actually, is the...
The one of the things that sets everything off for the Skaven expansion is that the Seer Lord on the Council of 13 has his head taken apart by the Horned Rat.
Yeah, the number one just goes, I'm getting promoted.
Yeah, demoted to worm food. No, come on, this is Skaven. They ate him themselves. All right, so there is a spot on the Council of 13. The Seer Lord, the only Grey Seer on the Council of 13, is suddenly out of favor with the Horned Rat and the rest of the Council. The rest of the Council goes, you know what? All of this. Whoever can bring us the head of... there's the usual Skaven politicking. I want this guy on there. I want that guy on there. We want this one in here so that we can control the council. Never mind what the Horned Rat wanted. Because mm-hmm. He had said, get our new Seer Lord. But yeah, okay, the Seers are in bad favor with everybody because it's obviously all their fault. Right. And then they say, okay, let's make this fair, add quote marks as needed. We'll make this fair. Whoever brings us the head of dwarves, Thorgrim Grudgebearer. Whoever brings us his head gets the seat.
So the head of the dwarf king
is what it takes to become the next.
Holy and of course, shit.
Yeah, they're all going crazy like, okay, well, how do you do that? So the whole book is a whole lot of Skaven politicking, just going crazy. The Clan Pestilence invades Lustria, and they blow up a moon. No, actually, that was Clan Scar that blew up the moon, but still.
What?
Yes.
A giant warp cannon, wasn't it?
Yes. The Grey Seers were doing this spell for years and years. One of the things that gets mentioned throughout the book is how the Chaos Moon keeps getting bigger and bigger, or how it's so close, nobody knows why. It's because the Skaven have been... or the Grey Seers have been casting a spell to bring it down for apparently a generation or two.
What, to get all the warp stone?
Yeah, basically. And then the clan squire goes, eh, that's taking too long. Boom! But that happens further in the book. It's the clan squire, or not, clan pestilence, all the plague bugs, they're invading Lustria. They're screwing with the lizard men. The lizard men are fighting a losing war. It's, we're going to fight here. Oh, we're getting our ass kicked. Okay, well, it goes on and on.
Did they finally say why they're attacking the Lustria? Because, Thorgrim's nowhere near that part of the world.
They were told to, and because the plague monks are fucking insane anyways. That's their homeland. That's their, well, these guys have been resisting the pull of the horned rat forever, so we're going to knock them about. In the end, the lizard men say, you know what, screw this, we're done, we're going home. And it turns out that at the core of each of their temple cities is a spaceship. So the Slann all go climbing into their spaceship, or at least the ones that survived. I think it's like half of them survive, if that. And they pull on some of their Sauras and some of their useful skinks, and to the rest they say, peace, see ya. And they leave.
Screw you guys, we're going home.
Pretty much. And the lizardmen leave the Warhammer world. Mazda Mundi, I think this is what his name was, the one who rides the Stegadon.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
As the Slann are leaving, he's pulling all the power he can to stop the moon. It eventually explodes, and there's chunks, continent-sized chunks of warpstone coming down. And he's whipping up the power, blowing each of these chunks into little, less significant chunks. And he gets most of it, but not all of it. Lustria, and the Southlands, the areas south of Khemri, they get flattened. But for the most part, he saves the world there. And he dies. I think that's like the moral of the entire story. And they die. On the other side of the world, the old Karak Eight Peaks, or City of Pillars.
Yep.
With Belagar and Skarsnik and Warlord Queek all facing off against each other. Well, one of the vermin lords in this, they decided there isn't just the vermin lord. There are five different types of vermin lord, and then this lord of vermin lords, this vermin king. Funny, which is how his name worked out. Anyways, and this is, moving on a tangent, this vermin lord split was a sort of a precursor to what we saw happen with the bloodthirsters. Because now there's the three types of bloodthirsters,
yeah.
And we're fully expecting to see multiple types of Lords of Change, Keepers of Secrets, and Great Unclean Ones, which I think is going to be pretty freaking cool.
Well, again, if you go back 20 years ago, there were multiple kits for those different ones. They just didn't have multiple rules.
Yeah, exactly. But now they're all armed differently, they act differently, and absolutely nothing to do with Thankful right now. So these Vermin Lords set up a deal between the Skaven and Skarsnik. They say, we'll give you this fancy piece of Skaven technology and the head of Belagar if you go find somewhere else to go pick, find somewhere else to go fight. Skarsnik says, okay. So they give him this Skaven bomb that Clan Squire lost. Funny how that happened. I kick claws like, where'd the bomb go? I need that bomb. How am I going to work without that bomb? Shit. And then there's this whole massive fight, and Warlord Queek kills Belagar, character that's been around for generations.
That good anyway, so.
Well, he wasn't, but it was still he was he was an icon of how stubborn dwarves can be.
That's true.
So he I don't think he actually got a character stat anything until the most recent book. He didn't have a model until recently, at least.
I think he did, but again, tangent here.
Yeah. So they kill him. They give the head to Skarsnik. Skarsnik takes that bomb that the Vermin Lords gave him and blows up his former realm in the Eight Peaks, drops one of the eight pillars, and then goes on a walk. And as far as I can tell, we don't hear anything from him again. And then, let's see, Karak Kadrin, the Slayer Keep. This was a sad but interesting bit of the story. They take huge tanks of super concentrated poison wind gas. They implant them into the Skaven big monster things that part worm, part rat.
Oh, the monstrosities.
Abominations, that's right. Yeah. Well, three of them get sent at Karak Kadrin. One of them dies outside the keep. The other two get inside. One dies right inside the keep. The other one burrows its way down and dies eventually. And all three of them release this gas and kill the entire keep. All the dwarves in Karak Kadrin die.
All the slayers.
The only survivors were the task force led by Ungrim Ironfist in the first place to knock out the Skaven war machines. They see this crap coming out of their keep. They take the long way around. A couple weeks later, they go in through the back door. And they go up and they find, they're all dead.
Everybody's dead.
Everybody's dead.
There's a bit of an ongoing theme here.
Yeah, I'm noticing that too. I was giving you guys time to do that skit again, but apparently not.
I can't do it all the time. It would be too predictable.
Well, that's true. So, yeah, Karak Kadrin is dead. They're doing their final funeral rites. They're like, there's nothing we can do. Ungrim Ironfist goes to the Slayer Shrine, and he rubs his hands over the runes that are on the shrine itself, and boom! He's suddenly infused with fire. He throws this fire wave keep. Giving all of his former subjects a pyre. Just, okay, well, we can't bury you all, so we're going to turn you all to ash. Well, okay, good for him. And that's where the lore of fire went. The wind of fire, he becomes the incarnate of fire for a while. He goes off to save Karak. Which one is it? The High King?
Crocodile.
Oh.
Kazoon, correct, is it? Something like that, yeah. So he goes wandering off to do that. At that keep, Thorgrim Edgebearer leads his dwarves out the gate because they're surrounded by armies and armies of Skaven because, his head is the one that everybody wants. Out of a whole bunch of Skaven, and then realizes, oh shit, I'm cut off. We've moved too fast. Wait, what? Dwarves, how do you do that? Yes, they move too fast, too deep, and they're surrounded, and that's where Ungrim Ironfist comes in, throws the entire army into disarray, and Warlord Queek, he's like, I want that head, I want that job, so I'm going to go up and I'm going to kick his ass real quick. Well, at this time, Thorgrim had been beaten the shit, I had the shit beat out of him by all the previous fights. He's got broken ribs, he's got poisoned, but he's still fighting, and he's noticing his throne keeps healing itself. And it's like, what's going on? Why is this happening? But he doesn't really deal with it that much. He's like, whatever, I'm going to keep... It's the power of Grugni, I'm going to keep fighting. I'm going to fight with dwarven stubbornness. So he's doing that.
Very honorable.
Yeah, like a dwarf.
Damn straight.
Warlord Queek finally comes up to him and says, bitch, your head's mine. He jumps up at him, and basically what happens is Thorgrim pulls out his dick and slaps him upside the head. Grabs him by his neck, snaps his neck, throws him down, and just stomps all over him. And that made me sad, because Warlord Queek has been my favoriteest character ever. It's like, you didn't even give him a proper death! You just snapped his neck and stomped all over him. Oh! Disappointed. I'm sad. I have a little tear here. But, yeah, that's basically what happened there. It's like, bitch, please. Not even gonna try. Ungrim comes in, scares off the rest of the Skaven. And the dwarves are like, yay! They go back into the keep. The end of the story, Thorgrim is going up. He's doing his traditional after-battle climb up the stairs to this balcony.
To his Book of Grudges and all the rest of it.
Well, no, this is his... Apparently this is a tradition. It's a very long stairway, and he's supposed to think about one dead dwarf for each stair. And Jesus. It takes him hours to go up that stairway. So, yeah, he's doing that. He gets to the top, and he's looking out over this balcony at his kingdom. And, oh, hey, why are three knives sticking out of my chest? Oh, crap, I'm dead. He falls over. Deathmaster Snitch, however you want to say his name, killed him by stealth. Cuts off his head. And the head is being given to a certain infamous Grey Seer, who becomes the new Seer Lord and the new body on the Council of 13.
So Deathmaster Snitch was hiding inside the...
No, he was hiding on top of the mountain. Thorgrim went outside onto this balcony looking over his mountain.
Oh, it's not inside the keep. Oh, right, I get you.
So what he jumps down, he kills Thorgrim. And he carves these runes on the balcony itself so that other Skaven can skitter leap in, and that's how the Dwarf Kingdom falls. By stealth. By a sneak attack from above.
Oh,
one Skaven at a time.
So that was... there was one other note I should have mentioned. In that book, there was a treaty made between the Skaven and the forces of Archaon. At once the Skaven realized, yeah, those guys are too powerful, we won't win. So we're going to ally ourselves with you guys.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the big thing, that was one of the big things that comes out of Thankful there. Let's see.
Just going through a few bits here with the scions, because you said Ungrim is the scion of fire.
Yes, and then Thorgrim had the power, but he didn't utilize it, he didn't acknowledge it.
Is that why his throne kept healing? Is that why his throne kept healing?
Yeah, that's why his throne kept healing, because there was the lore of the Wind of Metal in there. But he wouldn't do anything with it, and it said, you know what, screw this, I'm gone. And it wandered off. And then he died. So, yeah. Let's see, what else happened in this book? Nuln fell, literally. They undermined it and stole all the black powder and all the steam engines and everything. And all that's left is a walled crater.
Was that Clan Sky nicking all of that?
Actually, I think it was... well, it was part of Skryer. It was part one of the Warlord clans.
Okay.
Thankful was leading that batch, I think.
So, did Ungrim actually survive to the end of this book, or is he another one on the corpse
list? He did survive the book. He was still the Incarnate of Fire at the end.
Jesus, a character that survived.
Yeah, I know. I'm surprised as well. Well, come on, Thankful survived. Ikit Claw survived. Oh, no eyes, Warlord Skrulk. Plague Lord Skrulk. I think he survived.
Since this book's... covered so much of the what happened to the dwarf realm during all this end of times. Technically three names haven't been mentioned yet.
Bugman,
Utrek, Felix, and
the White Dwarf.
Grombrindle. I haven't seen anything about them at all. I know there is they finish off the Gotrek series, he dies.
For a Slayer that basically kept alive for the, and you've got the end of times, that just, it's there.
Yeah, oh yeah, I agree. But
he's mostly
been a novel character rather than a fluff character. You know what I mean? How often has he shown up in an army book in a story role rather than, well, here's his character stats, here's his little blurb.
Gotrek's been a playable for basically day one. It's more the White Dwarf, which has been more fluff and only occasionally rules.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, they said he was the incarnation of Grugni or something like that. Mm. So it's possible he died there.
It just seems that's a bit of a wasted opportunity there. Yeah, all those books about this ultimate.
Maybe Grumbrindle died in the last Gotrek book.
Yeah, okay. It's just one of those that sort of, yeah, it just seems like a perfect setup.
This was a perfect opportunity, say, to give him some army book love, or, you know what I mean?
Yes, yeah, pretty much every other named character dies, even if it's just goes up to Thungroot and he breaks his neck, end of, he's dead.
Yeah.
He could have had his epic clash with God knows what. Yeah. Gotrek versus three vermin lords or something.
Yeah. Let's see. I think that was everything in that one.
So basically, at the end of this, the Skaven have allied with Chaos and dwarves are fucked.
Pretty much. There are a few dwarf keeps that shut their doors and they said, screw you guys, we're done. And we hear that they're still shut during Archaon, but they're not doing it. They're hiding in their hole,
mm-hmm.
which will be part of my baseless speculation later on.
Like the dogs that they are.
Wait,
what was that?
Like the dogs that they are.
More like rat. Well, not rats. More like prairie dogs.
I am curious, though, with those multiple Skaven armies outside, why Thorgrim decided to leave the fortress when they could have basically, those fortresses have been designed to last forever more against all outsiders.
That was actually covered. It was his thinking, if we sit here, they're just going to keep building up and we're going to be fighting forever. Whereas if we make this actual... there's a chance of breaking them, getting them to run.
Okay.
And which actually did happen. They broke, they ran. It took another dwarf army coming up behind them to work it, but...
And a scion of fire.
Yeah, there's that too. Yeah, exactly. But his plan did work. Sort of.
Okay, then. So that's basically, unless you can think of anything else, but... Then you've got the final book.
All right, final book was Archaon, or Archeron, or however Bear wants to call it.
Fuck it.
Bob the Everchosen.
Yeah, the Book of the Everchosen. There we go. So,
the twat this one, on the big arse.
This, this one was it. This was book five. This was the end of the end times. This was... everything that I'd been waiting for. This was like the funeral for my favorite setting ever. Well, one of them. It starts off with a death, much to no surprise. there was that two-headed Zinchian greater demon, Fate Weaver.
Yeah.
Well, he didn't see that one coming.
Wow.
Yeah, Archaon actually sacrificed him. Archaon sacrificed a Lord of Change to get the approval of the Blood God.
Fair enough.
And that was the introduction. That's how you start the end of time. Yeah. I hate it when people call it end of times. That's just my little pet peeve there. That was the beginning of the end times. Real quick question. This surprised me, actually, when I looked it up a few minutes ago. From the beginning of Nagash to the end of Archaon,
mm-hmm.
how long do you think it took in game time?
Well, considering there was quite there was a long siege along the Empire border in the Nagash book, so I'd say about 6 to 9 months.
6 to 9 months for the entire End Time series.
Mm-hmm.
That's your final guess right now?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So I'm looking at the beginning of the Nagash book right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts hang on, let me get the page again. There we go. Yeah, autumn of 2523. Storm of Chaos ran over the year of 2525, which was part of the thing that pissed me off about the whole thing. Okay, autumn of 2523. I am looking at the time of the last chapter of Archaon right now. And you guys are saying 6 to 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
Autumn of 2528. The end times took 5 years.
I suppose the Glotkin campaign, that was a fair duration as well.
When I was reading through it again, it actually took them a year to get through, to go through the Empire. The three armies to converge on Altdorf. It took a year.
Okay, fair enough then.
So yeah, the whole thing taking 5 years. Okay, so we're at the end where it begins with a death, as expected. Just out of, as a side note, seeing as I was talking about time, it begins in 2528, spring of 2528. Okay, so Chaos Horde has taken Middenheim. That was one of the things at the end of the other book I should have mentioned. At the end of Thankful, Necklace appears. And I thought he was dead at the time. And he goes and he steals the true flame of Ulrich. And that led to the fall of Middenheim.
Necklace is a bit of a player. He's all throughout this, he's been playing everyone for some sinister big game.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
He's got some big scheme.
He has this huge overall scheme trying to save the world.
Rivaling what the gods are coming up with.
Sorry?
Rivaling what sort of Zentral would come up with.
Well, this was actually a scheme from his from Lilith, since he's playing her part through the entire thing.
Mm-hmm.
The Maiden of Mysteries. There we go. Okay, so at the beginning of this book, Middenheim has fallen. Archaon has taken the Shrine of Ulrich and made it his new abode. He has a throne made of the bones of the priests of Ulrich. And he seems to be sitting there and just not doing anything. Nobody really knows why. Fate Weaver gives him a little shit about, why aren't you bringing about the end of the world? Why aren't you doing stuff? Why aren't you fighting? And it's like, yeah, bitch, please. I'll do it in my own time. And he sends this part's fun. He sends the Twisted Twin, the
Zinch champion who's...
The Zinchian champion.
Yeah.
Village, that's it.
Yeah.
He sends Village to take Averheim, which is where the Empire and the remains of the Imperial Army are hiding out. They've got this little keep, and we're not going to die, we're going to survive. And they have Ungrim Ironfist holding the keep with them, and they have the remains of the Bretonian army as well. They had broken out of the remains of Altdorf. They rode to Averheim, and we're going to stay here. What's his name? Wow, I am really bad with names today.
It's fine. I'll cut all the spaces in there.
It's the lack of sleep in this case. The champion of Sigmar, Valton, that's the name. He died at Middenheim, killed by a vermin lord, had his head lopped off, which means Archaon was in possession of Galmaraz, the hammer of Sigmar.
Oh, nice.
So he had it set up as a trophy over his throne, this hammer. And he had Valton's skull as a trophy, which, yeah, didn't last too long anyways. He broke it for some reason. So he sends Village to go besiege Averheim. Village fails. Karl Franz uses his ability as incarnate of the heavens to make a bridge, and Ghost smashes up a bunch of hell cannons, and then Arcane says, yeah, screw this, we're going to go do it ourselves. He leads his horde down, gets into a big fight with Ungrim Iron Fist, kills him. The Wind of Fire... No, I'm doing this backwards. Gets into a fight with Karl Franz and strips the Wind of Heavens from him. And then Karl Franz and a bunch of the Empire guys say, yeah, we're going to take off or leaving. And the dwarves say, okay, we're going to cover your escape. Ungrim Iron Fist fights and dies, and the Wind of Fire goes, see ya! runs off to find a new host.
So, does Heaven go off to find a new host as well?
No, the Wind of Heaven got sent back to Tzeentch.
Okay, fair enough.
Because, you know, Archaon took it.
So, currently, Fire and Metal are somewhere.
Fire and Metal are somewhere. At that time, what's his name? The, another one of those. I've got it right here. I thought I had it right here. Balthazar Gelt, that's the one. He's flying back. At the time, he had been Vlad's thrall for a long time. And he'd been stuck in the necromancy. And he's flying back, and it's just all going away, all the necromancy. He's locking it away. He doesn't want to deal with it. He doesn't want to be that kind of person anymore. He wants to go back to the metal. And then it hits
him.
The metal hits him. He becomes the incarnate of metal. And he's, through it all, through this entire book, he is this optimistic, we can do this, we can win, we can finish this, we can survive, through the entire book. And it's, compared to everybody else's, yeah, we're dead, we're screwed, we're going to fight, we're going to bloody their noses, but we're dead. It's really interesting.
He's the one in the... After this mission, I'm going to go home and marry my girlfriend.
Pretty much, really, yes, actually.
Dead.
They all die. So, he gets there, he helps her escape. The Empire and the Elves, and the Bretonians, not the Elves, because there's no Elves left there, they make their way to the Forest of Lorien to seek help from the Wood Elves, which at this time are all the Elves, Unlikith. The dwarves guard their rear, and for the most part die. There are a few from Zufbar that go with the humans because, you know, they weren't slayers. The alliance of humans and dwarves make it to the Forest of Lorien. They're being chased by this Cornate horde. The Ever Chosen says, I've beaten him. I'm good. He goes back to Middenheim. And he's digging something up. He's got slaves and Skaven digging these tunnels through the mountain that Middenheim has been sitting on forever. The humans and the elves, or the dwarves, wow. Learn to think, Ryan.
There's a huge difference between elves and dwarves.
Well, they all smell funny. They get to the Forest Lorien. They get attacked by the Khorne Horde, led by this new character that looks like ass. The dwarves say, okay, well, we're going to cover you guys' retreat in this little canyon so the humans can reach the elves. And some of the elves, led by Caradhran, the former head of the Phoenix Guard, the ones that were bound to Asurion. Phoenix Guard, that's what it was, yeah. And they come in and they wipe out the Khorne guys and everybody's happy. Yay! They go, everybody gets together. They realize, hey, Karl Franz was an incarnate. He's kind of not anymore. Caradhran is an incarnate now, incarnate of fire. They all see where Teclis is.
Who's this now? Who's the incarnate of fire?
Caradhran, the Lord of the Phoenix Guard.
Okay, fair enough.
He became a special character 3 editions ago, I guess. something like that. He had a pretty cool model, actually.
Yeah, yeah. I know the when you said in charge of the Phoenix Guard, I sort of put the name to it. I just missed that for a second.
Okay. So there's a whole lot of politicking going on about what are we going to do? How are we going to beat this? How do we finish this? And there's a whole mistrust thing going on because, you know, high elves, dark elves, wood elves, humans, and the few surviving dwarves, and the dwarves don't even have an incarnate anymore, so they're like, eh?
Yeah, this is bullshit, right?
Yeah.
Elves suddenly get extra incarnates, and the dwarves get none. This is... No, fuck off. I mean...
So they're trying to figure out what's going on.
The two hardest dwarves don't even get a fucking looking in the whole five books. And then they go, oh, we'll give you this as a token gesture and we take it away again. No, fuck off.
Well, you want to know, this is the way I'm looking at it. Regarding the dwarves in the Warhammer world, fuck them.
Oi, bastard.
Really, it's... They did get a bit of the short stick, but see what I did there. But is the really?
I mean,
what do you do with dwarves anymore? Really, it's the
Like in the Warhammer world, they've kind of always had this thing about all dwarves are anti magic and they lock it in runes. But they could have still done something if they really, you know, with the sign of fire and metal. They could have done something with them rather than just
could have. They
go, oh, I resist this offer, and the Winter Magic says, okay, fine, sod you, we'll find somewhere else. I mean, that just seems a bit cheap.
Yeah, I think...
You're just bitter.
Yeah, like a dwarf player.
Nice. Okay, so the humans and the elves are arguing over what are we going to do when they get word that there's this massive... undead horde headed towards the Forest of Lorien. Well, what we hadn't covered yet was this massive Nurgle horde invaded Sylvania. They got into a big fight, and it turned out... you remember Isabella, Vlad von Karstein's lost love? The whole reason he was wandering around trying to... he agreed to serve Nagash because Nagash said, hey, I'll bring back your lost love. And Vlad's like, okay... Well, Nagash couldn't find her. He couldn't bring her back. Vlad was obviously pissed. Turns out, somebody else found Isabella first. Nurgle. So, leading this vast horde of demons into Sylvania to destroy the undead, because Nurgle is a god of life. He loves life in all its many, many, many forms. And the undead were, well... dead, so he doesn't like them. So he's sending this army led by a resurrected vampire. Isabella. That was one of the spoilers that pissed me off. That when the book was right coming out, I was thinking, hey, I'm going to avoid all the spoilers I can. And then I see multiple character profiles without any of the fluffs. Like, okay, I can read those. That's cool. Isabella, that's awesome. Isabella the Accursed? Okay, that's interesting. She uses the lore of Nurgle. Ah, oh, fuck me. Spoilered. That pissed me off. So, yeah, she's coming down with the Nurgle forces, and they lay siege to Nagash's Black Temple, to his Black Pyramid. And they're all fighting, and Nagash actually gets up to her, and he's like, why are you doing this? You can't win. You're not strong enough to defeat me. I am full of all of this death magic, and you're just a vampire. What do you expect to do here? Her reply was, "Oh, I'm not a threat here. I'm just a distraction." At that point, that was when the Black Pyramid blew up because the Skaven mined up behind and underneath and set all kinds of bombs inside Nagash's pyramid. All of a sudden, his huge source of magic goes boom, shit. So he's all pissed off. He lets loose, blowing all sorts of death magic around. And then he stops and realizes, well, shit, how am I going to get all that power back? I just blew my load. He's still got all of his power. He still has the Wind of Death. But he didn't absorb enough of it or keep enough of it to elevate himself to godhood as his original plan. So he's just this uber-powerful beast, but he's still stuck on the mortal realm.
So he fucked up, really.
Yeah, he got pissed and he got
He's still technically a scion of the death magic.
Well, that was part of it. He has
it's just
that.
The other power that the was inside the Black Pyramid he never had chance to plug
into. What he had done was he had based the lore of death in Sylvania, and he had been absorbing all of it. That was his plan. Absorb it all and ascend. Become the god of undeath. The god of death, basically.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't work out that way, obviously. So he's sitting there going, well, shit. What can I do here? I'm not going to win on my own. I can't win on my own. So I'm going to go enlist the aid of mortals. And he leads his force to the Forest of Lorien, where the elves and the humans and the dwarves had retreated. So, as I said, they're all sitting at the forest, and this huge undead horde comes up, and they're like, oh, shitballs, we're going to die here. It's not going to be chaos, it's going to be the undead.
Yeah, Ryan, just a quick one on that bit with Isabella. Does Vlad know what's happened?
Oh, yeah, he sees her. At the end of the Glotkin book, he had been infected by... And in this book, he's still coughing up chunks of lung, and he's not doing good at all. And she kills him.
Women.
Well, come on. But stop and think. This is Vlad von Karstein. He still has the Karstein ring.
Oh, yes.
He came back, and dying evidently cured him. Okay. Which actually leads on to something we'll see later on. So we've got this undead horde outside the Forest of Lorien. All the elves and the humans say, okay, well, we're going to put aside whatever differences we have. We're going to fight these undead. They go out. They set up their battle lines. The undead are standing. Von Karstein comes up and says, Nagash wants to parley. What? Carnet of Death. Which they already knew anyways, but... So, it's a full council of incarnates. I believe that's Airway at the... Oh, no, there's one more.
Now, it's Beast is still AWOL.
Beasts and Light. Teclis is wandering around. He has the Flame of Ulrich. There's this big fight going on, He sneaks into the Old Elk, or whatever it's called, or the Ancient Oak in the middle of the Forest Thorn.
Oh, okay.
That's the one. And he steals the remainder of Ariel's power. She had died, but her corpse still had power. He steals that power, adds the Flame of Ulrich, and infuses that with the Lore of Light, and brings back his brother, Tyrion. Tyrion, having died, comes back without the Fury of Cain. Once again... good-ish. About as good as a high elf can get.
Still wouldn't trust him.
Well, fuck no. So, that brings us up to 7 incarnates, I believe. We have Caradhrian, the Incarnate of Fire. Tyrion, the Incarnate of Light. Nagash, the Incarnate of Death. Lariel, whatever her name is. Incarnate of Life. Malekith, the Incarnate of Shadow.
Balthazar
Gelt, the Incarnate of Metal.
Heaven is fucked off.
Heaven, yeah, there's Karl Franz, he has the remains of the Wind of the Incarnate of Heavens.
Well, I thought you said Zentrid taken that off him.
Most of it. He had like the dregs.
Okay. And one more.
And then that left the Lore of Beasts somewhere. Nobody really knew where. So they're trying to figure out what's going to happen. And that's when Bellicar, the first ever chosen, says, you know what, we're going to mess with things. Oh, actually, there was one other thing that was very fun before that. All the incarnates are like, well, how are we going to trust you, Nagash? You're a dickhead, and you stole the daughter of whoever's blood to become alive. And he's like, well, I can't do anything about that. Her soul is now a plaything of Slaanesh. Which, kind of pissed off River Queen and Tyrion. But, and he says, but, I can give you the one who finished. Well, really what happened was cut her throat.
Yeah.
Nagash says, well, here, you can have the one who killed her. And he incapacitates Manfred. And gives up Manfred. Because Manfred is the one who did kidnap her to begin with. And as far as the elves and humans know, he's the one who did the work. So Manfred gets knocked out, gets tied up, and gets tossed under the Oak of Ages. They shove a bunch of tree roots at him to suck out the life of him over the next 1,000 years or whatever. Just a horrible, horrible way to go for even a vampire.
Sort of dicking him before Manfred dicks Nagash.
Yeah. Everybody's getting screwed over in these books. So, we've got Manfred down in the Oak of Ages. Bellicar says, well, I don't remember off the top of my head what it is now. But I'm going to set up this huge raid. So there's these pissed off group of elves. They'd gone blood mad, and the Everqueen says, yeah, you're not allowed to have any more power. The Helbron, the queen of the witch elves. Well, she gets another band, and she's attacking the Oak of Ages. There's a band of Slaanesh demons that Bellicar sets against the Oak of Ages, and a herd of beastmen as well. I think it was beastmen. These three different armies are attacking at the same time, and the different groups of the incarnates or whatever are trying to fight these off. And it looks like they're about to win, and Manfred escapes. Oh, one of the other storylines that kicked in around this time. Lilith is forced to admit to the head of the remaining Bretonians that, oh yeah, by the way, I'm the Lady of the Lake. Yeah, and you can guess how they took that.
Well, knowing the Bretonians, they probably got all on their knees and prayed to her.
Nope. They got all butt hurt and said, hey, you've been lying to us ever since day one. Well, yeah, I had to forge your kingdom into a weapon against chaos. All of these people have died because you wanted the humans to save the elves. Fuck you. We're gone. Yeah, shattered their faith entirely. And good, they wandered good off. And there's no sign. Let's see. The three armies attacked the Oak of Ages. They eventually mostly win, but decide, we have to take the fight to Archaon. To Archaon. But we're not sure how, and we're not sure when. We're not sure, blah, 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 back to politicking. And that's when Kubunda, the bloodthirster, takes the blood hunt into the forest of Lauren. And this huge, cornate horde of demons is attacking. Because, nothing can be peaceful in the Warhammer world. So, they realize it's not going to work. The incarnates decide this. I don't remember who cast the spell, who did it, but they told each of the all of the incarnates and their immediate forces away from the forest, right into Middenheim.
What, like a giant teleport?
Yeah, it was a huge, massive teleport. All of these forces pulled into Middenheim. All eight incarnates. So, they're fighting. Well, they appear, but they're all scattered around. Nobody knows where any of the others are. Some of them do manage to group up. One of the fights that was really interesting is Malekith leading a bunch of high elves and dark elves and wood elves fighting Skaven. And suddenly this bunch of orcs come on. It's like, orcs? What the fuck are they doing here? Yeah. Remember that incarnate of beasts? Yeah.
So this teleport had summoned the eighth one wherever he was to the fight as well.
Yeah, the... what's his name? Grimgor. Grimgor Ironhide was the eighth incarnate, the incarnate of beasts.
Yeah. Was the one in the Storm of Chaos that knocked Archeon onto his ass and then walked away?
Yep, exactly. And there's a bit of repeat of this.
Oh, God. Because
the Skaven were shooting over the elves at the orcs. The orcs are going, well, shit, we can't have that. We're going to be with the elves. So they're fighting, and the elves are getting their asses kicked horribly. And Malekith does something completely unexpected. He surrenders to Grimgor. He says, yes, we're only elves, but allow us to fight alongside you. Grimgor accepts. So you've got, all of a sudden, Grimgor and a bunch of black orcs that are infused by the Wind of Beasts alongside the Wind of Shadows infused Everking, or whatever he's called now, King of the Eternity King, that's what it is. And it gets messy. The Skaven obviously run away, like always. The assorted hordes converge on the former Temple of Ulrich after massive fights, as expected.
Was that the one that in the Clock King that Karl Franz was fighting outside of with Vlad?
No.
Oh, it doesn't matter.
No, you're thinking an Altdorf. This is up in Middenheim. So we've got... They all combine, or they all gather, and there's this huge melee, and not many of the humans survive. The bloodthirster Kubunda reappears, and he knocks Karl Franz into the Temple of Ulrich. Now, you remember what I had said about that place before? That's where Archaon's throne was. You remember what was on Archaon's throne?
A little hammer.
The words that made me smile when I read them were, well, hello, old friend. And that's where it's revealed that Karl Franz is Sigmar. And Sigmar has his hammer back. That was a funny thing throughout the... Once I actually realized it, throughout most of the book, they don't refer to him as Karl Franz. Other people call him, but the text always refers to him as the Emperor.
Ah.
And once I saw that, it was like, wait a minute, what the fuck? They brought Sigmar back? Click, 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 ding!
Why don't I get this image, though, of him flying in there, finds that, and goes, hello there, old friend. And then, like, the old Mario music, when he's got the hammer just going forward.
Pretty much. Yeah, he gets the hammer back, and he gets the Wind of Heavens back. Takes it back from Tzeentch, somehow. So, suddenly, there's eight incarnates again. And then Archaon attacks. It was somebody else. Somebody else attacked. Defeated Caradhran, the incarnate of fire, and squished him like a grape. Stomped on his chest. He's dead.
Definitely dead.
Definitely dead. Definitely. So there were the seven incarnates. The incarnate of life, the Ever Queen, she's been getting a lot weaker throughout this entire story because Chaos is winning. Chaos is messing with the weave of the world, and she's the life, she's the incarnate of life, so that's throwing her all off. The incarnates realize they have to defeat Archaon and whatever ritual he's performing. He had dug up this artifact deep in the mountain, the Foshlog or whatever it's called. He's got this ritual going on. Normally, this is an artifact from the old ones. Nobody knows what it was supposed to do originally. What they do know is Archaon finishes this ritual. It's going to create a new rift into the Realm of Chaos, much like the one at the North and South Poles. Those two are balanced against each other, which is why they're not tearing the world apart. He introduces this third one. It's not going to have an alternate on the farthest side of the world to balance it out. It's going to tear the world apart.
Mm-hmm.
So, they fight their way down to where Archaon and his Swords of Chaos are waiting. The four gods of Chaos say, shit, dude, we're not going to let you lose like that. And they each send a couple of greater demons and a horde of lesser demons. This part amused me, really. Khorne sends this great, powerful bloodthirster. He's total badass. Zeech sends this ultimate powered Lord of Change. He's this great tactician. He's this great...
He does.
He's actually, it's more of a melee type because that's unexpected. That's a change.
Okay.
Nurgle sends this great tactician, great unclean one. This guy has led battles beyond compare and has always won. Slaanesh says, well, you know, if the old world goes away, there's a lot less pleasure and pain. I'll send this Lord of Change, or this Keeper of Secrets. He's just, you know, this kind of useless dick. I'm. If we win, cool. If not, eh.
While the rest of them are fighting, he's in the corner knocking one off.
Yeah, pretty much. So, the incarnates and their hordes, or their remaining, not really horde, their army, against these demons. And the cavern is shaking, and all this magic is being thrown about. Eventually, the demons lose. The incarnates win, but it's just the incarnates remaining.
How's Grimgul dealing with being side by side with, like, these elves and dwarves and humans and stuff?
It's basically, I don't like you guys, but you know what? That's the boss I want to beat.
Okay.
I want to beat Archaon. If you guys are going to just keep the rest of the guys busy, okay, cool. They finally get into the Swords of Chaos. So they wipe them out. There's a lot of fighting, a lot of blood, a lot of people die. In the end, well, not in the end, close to the end, Grimgor faces off against Archaon. Take a guess how that went.
Is it deja vu from about a... the wet grizzle of confusion from a few years back?
Nope. It's a big fight. It's muscle against muscle. They fight it out, and it's a beautiful fight. But Grimgor lost his head. Literally.
Okay.
Chop! Archaon beat him, cut his head off. And it was like, wait a minute, what? That's not right! But yeah. And then Tyrion comes on and fights him. Fights Archaon. Was it Tyrion? No, it was Karl Franz. Because he caved in the Drogor's head. And Deathwing dies. And yeah, Karl Franz. Sigmar. Same. throughout this entire book, Sigmar's a lie! Sigmar's a lie! I don't believe in Sigmar! Sigmar's bullshit! Sigmar's fighting your ass, bitch! In the end, Archaon falls down a hole.
As you do.
The ground cracks open.
Is this when he's fighting Sigmar, or is this when he's fighting someone else?
He's fighting Sigmar at the time. He falls down the hole. Eventually, he crawls back up and gets killed by Tyrion, I believe. At that point, we've got the Incarnates going, well, shit, what do we do here? So they're all pushing their magic at this artifact, trying to stop it from becoming a new rift. Oh, one of the other fights I got to mention, because this is interests me. Vlad met up with Isabella again. And they're fighting. Not really fighting. He's just trying to defend himself.
Are they going to have makeup sex?
Not really. Well, maybe some necrophilia, but...
Oh, yeah.
Get all warmed up and crack open a cold one.
Did that come out? That was going to be just my inner voice there. Sorry.
So what Vlad does, he catches her arm. He twists it behind her back. He takes off the Karstein ring, puts it on her finger, throws them both off a wall, and they land on a spike. Kills them
again.
Yes. Yeah, actually. So, what happened when Vlad, who was infused with the power of Nurgle, died? He came back healthy. Well, a few minutes later, they're wandering around, and they see the corpse of Vlad on the spike, but, like, what happened there? Nobody knows. No sign of Isabella.
He sacrificed himself for her.
Yeah, he loved her. Stupid fire. So, back to the artifact itself. As I had said, Manfred had escaped. And Manfred, he had been sneaking up with the others, trying to figure out, which side am I going to go for? Am I going to be a servant to Nagash forever if I help them? Or do I aid the gods of chaos and be my own beast? Well, he decided, and he stuck a sword through Balthazar Gelt. Threw off the ritual. And that's when Tyrion said, you bitch, and shoved the sun sword up into the vampire. You can guess how that went. Manfred died. Painfully. So, at that time, Teclis had been a captive of Archaon. He tries to bind up the power of beasts and fire because they've been whipping around already, so that he could aid with the binding, but they killed him. The two winds tore him apart. So they're sitting there, nothing they can do. It's game over. Game over, man. It's game over. And it's the end. The artifact pulses and takes all of the winds of magic from the world. All the magic that had been binding certain characters together, certain people together, is removed. Malekith, being 7,000 years old, is sitting there. No, he's still alive at the end. He's sitting there. He's like, I'm croaking. I'm as weak as I've ever been. Nagash, on the other side of the orb, is watching himself collapse into dust. The three remaining elves... No, three... I think that's... Yeah, at this point, there's Tyrion and the Everqueen. They're just standing there watching it. They're like, there is nothing we can do anymore. If we leave, it's going to get us anyways. The orb pulses. They're absorbed into it. I'm assuming Nagash's as well, because Malekith, at the end, it's all from Malekith's point of view. It absorbs all of them. It pulses again. It absorbs Malekith. And the way they put it, this is interesting to me. He's absorbed, and he sees all of his memories. He sees his entire life flash before his eyes. And then all of his memories are gone, and he has no reminder of who he is or what he was or anything. It's just pain and laughing. And then there's not even that. It's just him floating in the void.
Okay.
And as everybody on Twitter and anybody that's paid any attention to the internet saw, there was that last page spoiler where this nameless, voiceless, faceless being is floating through the void. So, on to baseless speculation.
Well, just go a little bit more into that. Basically, the world nukes over an instant or a millennia, because time is irrelevant now. Yep. The gods are fucked off looking for their next plaything, mm-hmm. and there's this tiny speck of light floating around. Eventually, it goes near an orb and clings onto it, and then
starts a whole new world.
So it's like, what is that orb that it clings onto, and this speck of light? Yeah, you're assuming it's Malekith.
Well, partially.
Yeah, I thought it was
Malekith wasn't the only one absorbed there. Tyrion, the Everqueen, and Nagash were absorbed as well. They were still alive when they were, well, as much as Nagash could be alive when they were absorbed. So, right there, it's that could be leading into the theoretical bubble hammer, because there's at least four specks that are floating around. Who's to say that there weren't more people that were absorbed and that could do something like that as the world ended? Another thing that I noticed that interested me, or that came to mind, was speaking of the dwarves before. Several of the dwarf kingdoms locked themselves down and said, yeah, we're not going anywhere. Who's to say that some of those ancestor runes in their keeps couldn't keep their keep together through the end times?
Yeah.
Who's to say their power wasn't that powerful? It could be that we'll have space dwarves. Hello, squats.
Exo armor. Attack trikes.
Actually, that makes sense right there. If we stop and think about it, I mean, they're not. Games Workshop is not going to bring squats back to 40K. Who's to say they're not going to bring squats to Warhammer Fantasy?
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, the way the last set of models for the Iron Guard and that looked very Exo-Armor-esque anyway.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it really was. Well, if I cut off that gun and give them a bolter,
yeah,
done. Or I give them a las gun, whatever.
Yeah. But so that's how it ends, basically.
Or how it begins.
Well.
And what tales yet to be told, and the cycle of the stars. These were truly the end times. But they were also the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, at the same point, you could... I mean, if we're going for random, buck-wild speculation, I mean, yeah, the Chaos Gods have now gone off to find their next plaything to fight over.
Mm-hmm.
This idea that's been going around the internet for a little while of bubble realms, is it a case of Warhammer 9th is a completely different world? So it's not
Did the Chaos Gods find another world, and this is the new world that we're fighting over because of the Chaos Gods and because of something entirely brand new?
Because if we're the old ones, are basically aliens,
mm-hmm.
who's not to say they didn't go to another realm and seed it with the elves and the dwarves and the humans for their greater plan, like they did in the Warhammer world?
There is that.
How about this one?
Speaking...
Go. I'll go second.
Okay, there were a few things in this that actually kind of into what you're talking about. They did have a few nods to 40K. There was, when one of the elves was wandering through Nurgle's realm, he came upon this knight in gray, this knight in silver, who was really badass and really powerful. And there's a lot of speculation that was Drago from the Grey Knights, because he's stuck in the realm of chaos, and he's this really badass knight, and he was, it seemed to fit.
If I remember correctly, if that's the one I'm remembering from the Cain book, he was a bit buggered till those elves actually rescued him.
What do you mean?
I thought he was like tied down or something.
He was. I don't remember exactly where he was at that point, but yeah, he was. He was bound in the realm of chaos. He couldn't leave, and at the end, he was impaled, but he was still alive and fighting. Yes, he's a badass. Yes, he's stuck there. One of the other ties to 40K was in the Thankful book, where the Skaven had taken one of the Lizardmen cities, and they find this weird device that starts talking to them in. Kind of sounds like a dialect of elf, but not really. They're not really sure. But it's like a far squeaker, what they call far communication device. So they shoot it. So there we've got ties to the Eldar. So, yes, it could be that we'll find another Old One world where the elves and the dwarves and whatnot are still around. Or they could go with the theoretical bubble hammer, which was little bits of the remains of the former hammer world that are bouncing into each other, as been rumored.
Just a bit that's just popped into my mind now. You know, this thing about in that page about this orb and all this orb of light and all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Did they ever say what happened to Lilith's daughter and her? Realm.
That's one of the things that was interesting. Lilith lost connection to it. She assumed it was destroyed. It was dead. It was gone. There was no hope whatsoever. And she sacrificed herself so that that's where they got the power to defeat some... I think it was defeat the... I think that was the power to the for the teleport. That was Lilith's blood. Where Teclis stabbed her, stole her power, and teleported everybody. Okay. That's where it came from. That's right. Like I said, I've only read it once, and it was a really fast read. Even though it's a really thick book, I just burnt right through it.
Here's some wild speculation for you.
Okay.
Each of the incarnates become the god of a race.
Yes and no.
And so
I can see all
the fluff dies. So all the elf fluff relating to the sort of different mythologies anyway, with the Vol and Cain and whatnot. That you know, it's tight. They've used a lot of mythology that has already existed. So with GW bending more towards copyrightable names, you know, that's why they changed all the names of the bloody paint, wasn't it? So they could copyright, because you can't copyright Chaos Black and Skull White. So that's why they changed them all. What happens if they want to copy, make sure they've got everything sewn up nicely as an IP?
They keep using the same ones.
They have killed the old gods, the gods that you can't copyright.
Well, why couldn't they? Is Cain a name known?
I think so. I think like...
You mean, and his brother Abel?
Well, with the spelling. Khaine. Is that one?
I would imagine they can't... There are some things they can't copyright.
Probably. And that's probably stuff that's just gonna...
Just because it's common use. But anyway, we're getting far too into lawyers, and we don't discuss lawyers.
Yeah.
Maybe they can copyright things like Nagash.
That was my original theory when the first two books were out. It was they're going to be creating new gods. There's going to be Nagash. There's going to be Archaon is going to become a new chaos god or something like that. My whole theory was the end times is not the end of the world. It's the elevation, the ascension of new gods.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't work out as I thought, but it's still possible, I think. Having said that, there are a few that... If that bubble realm that Lilith had created did survive and she just lost contact, That means there is a new elven god of the dead, Edria.
Mm-hmm.
That means whatever that elf, that wood elf that was her consort, give me a moment, I'll find it. He disappeared at the during the Glotkin book, and he was supposed to become her become the father of the new gods. But since the world disappeared, or the bubble disappeared, she thought it was all gone. It was all dead. There's no more. Araloth, that's his name. She thought it was all gone. But if she just lost contact with it, then they're still there, and he's still the father, the new father of the elves. Or new father of the elf gods. Replacing Asurion.
Yeah.
Or Asurman. Asurman, that's the one.
So there's a lot of different ways I can go here.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, another thing that at the very end of the Nagash book, there was a bit where you had Cetra's head in the sand, just looking at this vulture that's picking away on its thigh bone.
Yep.
And then there was this real kind of Unicron moment where it's like, we can if you agree to join us, we can make you bigger, stronger, faster.
Yeah.
And it's four voices. Did anything ever come from that?
No. As far as I know, no. That's one of the things that, I mean, there are characters that if they just went with the world without any resolution of those threads, it's kind of sad. I mean, Cetra is one of them. Isabella, what happened to her? She came back?
Mm-hmm.
Did she just die when the world ended? Did she get absorbed by the orb or by the artifact and go off and do her own thing?
There's definitely some loose ends. But they could be set up ready for the next 9th edition.
Yeah, there's a lot of things they could do with it. One thing that they could do, actually, this just dawned on me. For 9th edition, fighting during the end times. We know the world was over in a moment and in a millennia. It took years and years for the Chaos Gods to destroy it. There's still plenty of time for them to say, you know what, we're going to, at the end, here's the fights. Here's what's going on. We know the world has ended, but we can still do stuff with it. I don't know if they'll actually go that way, but...
Okay. No, it's just interesting. Right, so, unless any other speculation, after all of the five books, I've only read three of them. I have enjoyed what I've read so far. I mean, I haven't played Warhammer for probably about 5-6 years, but I still love the fluff and the story. What sort of were the best bits you liked in there?
The best bits? Wow.
Well, while you're having to think, I think one of the bits I liked the most, because it just appealed to my sense of humour, because in the Nagash book, because there was lots of, like, battles in and with enough information, you could reenact them if you wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
I liked how the Nagash one justified how vampires versus goblins, and then it was undead versus Bretonians. And yeah, you had a good variety in that book.
Mm-hmm.
But when in the story, when Manfred has been sent by Arkhan the Black to get the sword, was it the Destroyer or whatever it was?
The Fellblade.
The Fellblade.
The one that destroyed Nagash in the first place. Yeah.
Yeah. And he works his way down the warren of this chieftain that has the blade, and he eventually gets to the keep at the bottom of this warren.
Yeah.
And the Skaven warlord goes, right, I know what I can do. We'll destroy the bridge, and that way they can't get to us because there's this massive ravine, and we'll close the gate and bar it up, and we'll wait until the undead get bored and walk away.
Yeah.
And Manfred looks and goes, that gate you've used, it's made of a dragon skeleton. I know.
Yeah.
yeah. clicks his fingers, and the dragon comes back to life. It's pissed, and it just rampages, and then he gets the
Eat me? Oh, you want to eat my eat the flesh and make me suffer over weeks? Well, screw you! Chomp, 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 chomp.
And once he gets the fell blade, he walks out with his arm. He goes, you know what? I'll give that dragon just enough energy to stay active for about another 3 or 4 days.
Yep.
And it just, the humor in just doing that and the twisted logic, I thought that was just, it was just such a nice little touch. I mean, they could have done it that with Screaming Skull catapults and other necromantically created siege weaponry, they break through and this only goes, nah, we're just going to turn that dragon skeleton back to life.
Yeah, that was amusing.
Yeah, it just made me chuckle.
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff that I loved throughout all of these books. Just everything from Festus talking to the Nurglings, and then Kugoth, greater demon.
He kept coming out of this cooking pot.
Yeah, I think that was my favorite. I mean, everything I've always heard is Nurgle is the one chaos god with a sense of humor, and it shows through this little or through that storyline right there.
Not necessarily a sense of humor, but he's more human-esque in how he looks at people and treats people, rather than like the others look at them as either meat or pawns or stuff like that. He'll look at them.
He does that as well, but it's still. He's personable.
Yeah,
he has a personality. Nurgle has a personality. Khorne is just angry. Slaanesh just likes his toys, and Tzeentch is
manipulator.
He likes his other types of toys.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Nurgle, he's the bringer of life. May not like the life that he brings, but it's there.
Yeah, Father Nurgle.
Yeah, it's always amusing. You've got the greater demons that are running around laughing and yelling and being alive.
And you've got all the plague bearers desperately trying to count the plagues and the dead and everything else that they need to count and tally. And
yeah, there's so much variety in Nurgle, and that comes through where Festus is doing his thing. I think that's my favorite part of the series, really.
Okay, so I mean that's considering that's 5 books that we've just had a very whistle stop go through. The only other thing I would bring up, and it's one of these things that's always niggled me throughout the editions of the book anyway. For me, when they started introducing special characters in like 5th edition books, 4th, 5th edition, whatever it was, they were there as more certain character traits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, so here is Thorgrim to represent the stubbornness and the dwarf's ability never to forget a slight or, mm-hmm. yeah, whatever it was meant to be. And they were there for fun, silly games with your mates going, now let's just reenact this battle we read in the fluff, and we'll have these. And they were never at that time designed to be balanced.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they were there for the fun. And then the tournament scenes really started taking off, and people started taking them, and people went, hang on a minute, they're more powerful, I get more bang for my buck if I take these.
Yep.
And it seems, from what I've heard from the outside looking in, chatting to a couple of my mates, is that the tournament scene again has exploded with all of the end days characters doing a lot of ownership on the table.
I think part of that is the usual new shiny, nobody knows how to deal with them. I mean, it is, a lot of them are stupidly powerful. Nagash is stupidly powerful, but he's half an army right there on his own.
Well, I mean, if you take...
He's 1,000 points.
Yeah, not just Nagash, but if you say take Tyrion, the avatar of Cain or whatever, is Tyrion or is it Teclis? Can never get those two.
Tyrion, right. Yeah.
Yeah. They're elves. They all look the same to me.
Yeah. You're looking up all their noses anyway, so.
All their kneecaps look the same.
Yeah.
I could imagine, without looking at the rules in front of me right now, that he's going to be rather powerful as the avatar of Cain.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when you get to the last book where you've got all those scions, they're all going to be fairly butch. And if people are then taking them to events, going, this is a 2,250-point event, and going, I'm going to play this 900-point character that is broken to high hell.
Well,
is it kind of ruining the event?
Cause I couldn't really say.
In my mind, those end of day characters are meant to be more for the play around your mates, reenacting those battles, fun shits and giggles types events.
I couldn't say because I haven't done a tournament in about a decade. And I really am a beer and pretzel type player. I couldn't care less if it's balanced as long as we're having fun and everybody knows what to expect.
Yeah. But,
having said that, a lot of those characters are a lot more powerful and a lot more expensive than their baseline special character version. Mm. You're going to be paying a premium for each of these. Whether it's enough of a premium, I don't know. I'm not a game designer. I'm not a tournament player. It's entirely possible that they really are a huge bargain. I really couldn't say there.
But yeah, this one, yeah, you know what I mean? If you say, like, you and your mates are going to go, right, come around my house this weekend, we're going to play this, I'm going to use this scion, you're going to use that scion or that character. You know what you're walking into.
Mm-hmm.
You're there with the right mentality.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to a tournament where you really want to do well and you really want to win and, you know, or do as good as you can, I go to a table, I go, here's my dwarf army, and it's just my standard dwarf army. Oh, crap, they brought the avatar of Cain, or Malekith, the scion of Shadow, or whatever.
Well,
unless the points are done absolutely bang on, there's always that risk. That's all I'm sort of just voicing.
Well, yeah, there is that. There really is that. There is always also the normal game risk, the tactics, the player themselves, the dice. You could have the Starmie around, and if the dice say screw you, you can still pull off a win.
Okay,
but anyways, yeah,
yeah.
I've stopped caring about being competitive.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not something I really don't care about anymore. And yeah, anyways.
Yeah, like I said, I just thought I'd just see what your opinions on that was,
yeah,
really.
I think that is something for people that really are concerned about that to concern themselves with. I'm sure there is massive analysis of who should be taken, who shouldn't be taken somewhere on the internet, and I wish whoever wants to look at that, I wish them luck in finding it.
I'm sure there are many forums where they go through in great detail.
Yeah.
So,
this guy is 5 points overcosted.
One more thing cover is obviously I noticed in Archon, however you want to say his name, that basically more or less anything goes within reason.
That's obviously a very what's the word I'm looking for here? That's a controversial ruling there. A lot of it is there's a designer's note there that it's mainly specified for the scenarios included in Archaon, in that book.
Okay.
Because a lot of them are, you know, eight incarnates against a Chaos army.
Okay.
So you could take that rule and run with it with any game you want. obviously, I would have taken that rule and run with it to begin with, if that was what you so desired, really. But for the most part, the way I read the designer's note, it was really for end times scenarios, mostly.
Okay.
And also the fact that, just in general, in the fluff, right, you pretty much got a coalition of orcs, elves, dwarves, humans, undead.
Empire and Bretonian types. There are the two different types there, so...
Fighting chaos in all its shapes and forms, and Skaven.
Yep.
So, it pretty much take what you like, because there's justification that they could be together.
Yep.
About the only races that didn't get mentioned that I've heard so far are Chaos Dwarf and Ogres.
Ogres got... There were some Ogres that were fighting for Chaos. There were some Ogres that were fighting for the Dwarves for a short amount of time there.
But until, like the Grecius... Was it Grecius Goldtooth and that was meant
to... Yeah, his
to,
tribe... Or his, the Ogre Kingdoms as a whole dissolved.
Okay.
And they just all went crazy, they all went walkabout.
Okay, that covers that then, fair enough.
But there was no real... I mean, we see a band here, we see a band there. We don't see the majority of the Ogres. There's no real what happened to them. The Chaos Dwarves, well, yeah. The Chaos Dwarves.
They only exist in Forgeworld, it's fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
And even there.
So, finally to wrap this up, favourite model to collect?
Oh, man.
I would have to say mine is probably the Assassin Vermin King, or Vermin Lord.
That is a nice one. The one with the tri-blade throwing star?
Yeah, and like the little hood and like kind of ninja greater demon.
Yeah. Yeah, that one is nice. I like that one too. What about you, Bear?
I think it has to be the new Thankwell model. He finally got the Bone Ripper he deserved.
Yeah, those huge warpstone horns.
Mm.
That's the one part I wasn't so fond of about that model, really. But the rest of it, it is beautiful. For me, I'm going to have to say Nagash. There's just so much...
Nice model.
It's a beautiful model.
It's ridiculous. It's mental.
Though his head isn't big enough for the size of that body.
It's an imposing model, and I actually did build one for Robert from Combat Phase. I built his, and I put that thing together, and it is so interesting on the table. It's such a beautiful model. Once I got it put together, I'm looking at it, it's like, that model is going to be a nightmare to paint. Because I had put it together... because we were going to use it for a game, and yeah, moving on with that. It is definitely, definitely, definitely a model you have to do as sub-assemblies. but I love that model. I'm trying to get myself into buying one, but it's like, what's the state of Warhammer after this?
Yeah. I think you're not the only one that's asking that question. I think many people are asking that one.
I do believe the armies that exist now will be useful in some form, whether it's historical games, this is what's happening at the end times, we can still use those models. Games Workshop appears to... They're pulling a lot of the stuff back to direct only, as we all know, but they're also putting out books in paperback. The Tomb King's book is now in paperback, which kind of tells me that they're going to continue producing it even after 9th, because why continue producing a book for an army that belongs to a country that was erased? So I think they'll support what came before.
Maybe they're going to do a Warhammer version of 30K.
That would be... That would be interesting, actually. I hadn't even considered that. They got Warhammer 30K and 40K, and then they'll have Warhammer Fantasy Old World, Warhammer Fantasy New World.
Or whatever it is, but again, that's just an idea that's popped into my head. So
yeah, that's...
it's always dangerous.
Oh, yes.
It's not the worst idea. I've heard about all this.
Well, then, that was certainly a mammoth walk through the end of times. Sorry, end times.
Smack you, bear.
thank you for doing that, Ryan, because, you know, you won't be allowed to talk again. Kev will want his spotlight back next episode.
Yeah, Kev's been sitting there biting his tongue the entire time.
Love you, Kev.
Can't talk. Must keep quiet.
Ah, oh, you guys.
Love you, Kev.
Don't get bothered.
We'll get Mark.
My ego can take this.
Yeah, so.
I think that's everything.
Well, thank you for listening. I'm sure we will discuss this further when we see 9th edition, and I will play back all the wild speculations to see which one of us was right. I'm predicting none of us.
I'm pretty close with you on there. I think we'll see elements of several of them, but we didn't expect end times.
True.
Nobody expected what they were going to do with this at all.
It is definitely a brave move by a company to completely go for a clean slate restart.
Yeah.
Because whatever they do now, they have got rid of most of the realms, most of the characters, most of the baggage of going from one edition to the next.
Mm-hmm. It is a huge risk for them. And as much as a lot of people don't like GW for real or imagined reasons, both apply really. I do wish them luck with the reboot, restart, whatever.
And with that, it's good night from me, Dave. It's good night from Kevin.
Good night.
Good boy. And it's goodbye from Ryan.
Goodbye! Wait. What do you mean goodbye? We're not good night.